हरिः ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 80 The word vikalpa buddhihi indicates that consciousness within various material bodies reveals different aspects of the Lord's creation. Birds, such as seagulls, glide on the ocean breezes, experiencing the Lord's creation of wind and altitude. The fish experience life within the water, and other creatures intimately experience life within trees or on the earth. Human society affords its own varieties of awareness, and similarly in heaven and hell. Different experiences are available. Okay. All types of material consciousness are transformations of the three modes of material nature, the expansions of the Lord's illusory energy. Remember we were saying about the Pramana Chaitanya. Means the first aspect of when the mind, through the senses, observes something. So you first have to have as the pramana is like what you can actually see, because you have particular senses and you have a particular level of consciousness, and according to that you actually perceive different things, right? It is like say if there's a mosquito in the room, you perceive one. You can perceive the mosquito and you think of it. Oh no, this is going to be annoying. Right? Now there's a lizard on the wall. It also sees it and it thinks, ah, dinner.
Yes.
Right? So that's just that perception. Then there's the element of actually what you can see. You know what I'm saying? It means like we can look at things, we see things, but let's say bugs, they can't. They can't see a table. They just see that there's something there and they land on it. But they can't perceive that it's a table, right? Or they can't see past like ants. You know, if you stick your finger on the ground and it's like more than a few inches in front of them, they don't move around. They wait till they get right up to it and then they go around. So they can't even see that far. You understand? So all these living entities, that their ability to perceive things is different. And that's all by the Lord's potency, all by the modes of nature. Right? So we just take it as a given, oh, we can all see this. No, that's because the Lord's energies allow that.
You said previously that the mind, he becomes an object.
Yeah, that's the second stage.
That's after.
Yeah, it means now that you see it, you perceive it, then the mind is taking that shape. Mm. So whatever you have the potency to perceive, the mind will take that shape.
And when we say that people view things differently,
mm-hmm.
it means because of their perception and the modes that influence them specifically, their mind takes a different shape from
yes. And, you know, it may be externally the shape, but then you also have to see is that then the next step, the third step, is going to be when the mind then accesses the memory of previous impressions mm-hmm. of that. And because the impression will carry the whole mood, the attitude, your identity, you know, the desires of this, all that will be all included in that. So just seeing being able to see something, the mind taking that form, you still aren't actually really perceiving yet. Right? You'll consider, because that's all abstract. It becomes concrete when you look at it compared to your previous samskaras.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Then you're going to decide if this is good or bad or this or that or all these things. So these three stages that it goes through. The consciousness there. Then you have the reasoning process, you know, and all these different things.
But that would be by the intelligence.
Yes, but it's all the subtle body. So all the whole subtle body, we identify the subtle body by its four different parts. But we're only doing that so that you know the parts and know how they function. But they'll all work together. You know, it's just like Buddha yoga. You define karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. But Buddha yoga means all of them are working together. It's just which one's prominent, you call it by that. So when the mind is prominent, we call it mind. When it's conscious, we call it that. When it's intelligence, we call it that. When it's the false ego, we call it that. But it's all part of one process.
Yes.
Like that? Because having got to that point, the impression is there. Then from that, now the intelligence will analyze that. Right?
Yes.
And then having analyzed, then the options that are there according to the particular identity you have, you'll choose. Right? Mm. Means the identity will be there, and then the mind will now choose.
Yes.
Right? So yes. That then becomes now the impression. Then you'll apply that through the senses again. So it goes from the citta back to the manas. Right? Because the mind, the connection with the senses, then you perform the activity. And then from the information that's coming in from that activity, the same process is going on, and transforming or supporting or that the impression that you have from before. Does that make sense? So it's an ongoing process. But all these things are given so that you can see, because we see here is that they're trying to say the consciousness itself or the cognition is independent. But it actually isn't, because it's dependent upon these adiatmic, adibhautic, and adidaivic. So depending on the modes of nature, you see in a certain way. So you can't say, it's because I'm producing this, because someone else is seeing something different from the same thing. So that means the object you're seeing exists externally. Then you are getting your internal impression. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. They're trying to point out it's all happening inside. Right. They meaning the Buddhists. Right? Yeah, so it's all happening inside, but it's... No, there is happening inside based on what's there outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because otherwise, why would you be driving nicely down the road and in your mind everything's really nice and this and that, and then when you turn the corner, then there's one of those two-hour traffic jams there. So why would you do that? If you're the one that's creating it because you're thinking, why would anybody do that? You know? Yes.
Maharaj, when we say samskars, it's only because the spiritual impressions or material impressions?
Either.
Yes.
It's just a matter of which way. Is it what kind of samskar it is? Yeah. Okay, so one's more some, one's more scar.
Yeah.
Like that, yeah. So,
yeah. 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 The only choice we have, it is choice of identity.
Yes, basically it's the choice of identity. Because this whole process, because then we say, well, how can we adjust this, you know, for devotional advantage, is by the identity. Even if you want material, you have to have the identity of being able to do. That's why you have a school of success where they say you identify with it. I'm successful. I'm going to do this. I'm a great guy. I'm fabulous. Everybody loves me. I love everybody. I'm so wonderful. And by that meditation, and it's supposed to be when you go to the office, the boss doesn't call you an idiot. Right? Like that. So it's all about identity.
And after it is automatic. Means we don't have.
Means the other things are going on anyway. That's what they do. Yes. The mind and intelligence do their thing, and the senses do theirs. It's just information is always coming in. Yes. Based on what is your identity, you do something. So if your identity identifies, I'm the controller and enjoyer, opportunities to control and enjoy, you'll take them.
Yes.
Like that. And if you identify, no, I'm a servant of Krishna,
yes.
I only do things connected to Krishna, then as opportunities come, you'll use them in Krishna's service.
Yes.
So that's why Krishna starts there. It seems like it's the end, but that's where you're going to do something. It's just like you do the whole process of making money, but then what you're going to do with it, once you have it, That will you can say, you know, clearly identify what is your intent.
Yes.
So now if you give it to Krishna, it's because you are a devotee.
Yes.
Even though being conditioned, you may still think it's mine, my work, my result, my money.
Yes.
But the point is you're giving it to Krishna so you can see as the identity is as a devotee.
Yes.
Maybe it's not as strong as someone who the whole process is about Krishna. But the point is it's still devotional. So we see here is that identity that I'm servant of Krishna, starting there, then the whole process of consciousness becomes purified. And results of activities means now you're going to act, giving the result of that. So if the end result, the identity is I'm servant of Krishna in the subtle process, then in the gross process, the end result will be offering to Krishna.
Yes.
And if in the subtle process the end result is I'm the controller and enjoyer,
yes,
then the end result of the actual gross application of that subtle, you know, thought will be sense gross, you know, karma jnana.
Yes.
So they're connected. It's a very direct scientific thing.
Yes.
So it's just being pointed out is that they're trying to say it's just the subtle is the whole thing. But actually, no. The subtle is from information coming in from the external and going back out to the external. Because if it's just in the mind, how does it have a full effect? And even if it has an effect, then how what's the position of it unless you apply it? Right, so you have to be able to apply it with the things that are coming in from the senses. Does that make sense? So even let's say someone's a Buddhist, but why will they have to be, let's say, renounced? Right? Because if you're just sitting there and thinking, you don't need to be renounced, technically.
Yes.
But because information comes in from the senses, that would be a question of renunciation or enjoyment. Now they have to contemplate it, and identifying that they are a renunciate, now they will not get involved. But that means then externally, then there is an application of that.
Yes.
So this whole idea is that it's all just within the mind. It you can see it starts to get less and less. So the first school where the external objects are there, and then you deal with them, right? Then is the most, you know, is more closer to reality.
Yes.
Then the one where they may or may not be there, it doesn't matter. It's the internal that's the most important. So it's starting to step away, and it's true it's important, but the reality of the things, that's what you're dealing with, because they don't know how to define reality. See, we're saying the things exist, but how you perceive them and your idea what to be involvement with them, that's the illusion. That I'm the controller and enjoyer, that's the illusion.
Yes.
But they exist.
Yes.
Right? That's the thing. You see a mango, you think I want to enjoy this. The mango exists,
yes,
but that you're going to enjoy separate from Krishna, that's the illusion.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's the thing. So as they step away and it doesn't matter, then the point is no, they do exist. Then this third school that we're dealing with now is it doesn't exist. It's just all within the mind. But then why would our mind come up with all these things? Why would all these minds have the same thing? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that why would that be there? Unless there's something else outside that's controlling it. But they're trying to say, no, my consciousness is doing the whole thing. You know, so it's like, let's say you're in Italy, and you have a whole group of Italians, and they all get hungry. Right? What are they going to think of? Right? Italian food. Right? Like that. You go to France, they'll think of French food. You go over to England, they'll think of that. You understand? Like that. So that's what's going to happen. So why is that? Why are they all thinking in the same way? Right? Because of the modes of nature. And that's created that particular mentality and that place and everything like that. So that's the whole thing, is how it's coming from outside the consciousness. So they can't explain any of this. So if you're sitting in a monastery somewhere where it's very bleak and nothing's happening, right, then you can come up with these kind of things.
Yes.
Because nothing's going on anyway. Right? So.
that even though they say that they are completely working on the platform of mind, that is abstractness, but still, in reality, they do the concrete jobs also, like application.
Yes, yes.
They do it.
Yes, yes, they do. Yes. That point is, I think it was in one of the sutras, then Baladeva Vibhushan points out that they defeat their own philosophy because they do activities anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Yeah, so that's always the point. So it's just not viable, the whole philosophy. Right? They're trying to answer a problem, I'm suffering, and I want to get rid of the suffering. But they're not catching that getting rid of the suffering. It's a matter of it's a matter of raising the consciousness, not trying to get rid of everything. Like, I mean, it's just an extreme form of neti-neti. You just get rid of everything, you know, until you end up with nothing. So then if you have nothing, then nothing bothers you, right? Is it, right? If you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose, right? Yeah. So
the reason is lack of identity.
They're thinking the identity is causing the problem, so they try to get rid of everything, including identity. So they don't even exist. But if they don't exist, then what's the problem in the first place? Why do we have to get involved? So, you know, it's just a react. It's an emotional reaction to the pain of the material world. And by the modes of nature, for some people, then getting rid of, you know, all these things then is for them an actual answer. But it's only for certain people in certain modes. Right? Because most people, when they think of Buddhism, you know, in the more popular kind of sense, it's just being peaceful, being vegetarian or vegan or something. You know, it's just, you know, being more peaceful and being nonviolent. That's the kind of thing. They have to put dirt there, so they have to move that to put the dirt. Because it means to either put the dirt at the end and then they by head load, walk it in. But then they'll take a lot of guys and all that. Well, this, they just bring the tractor and just dump it there. So that means until the wall goes up, then we'll have a very serious audience on this side.
It goes on fast.
Yeah, yeah. It won't be long until it's... Okay. Does that make sense? So it is showing that the adiadic, adiatmic, adidaivic, and adibotic, they're already there. Right? So the adiatmic maybe is what we're dealing with. But the adibotic is what we're seeing. And the adidaivic is what's actually controlling both of us. Like this. Yeah, so you see, it's just they're trying to be the controller, but then say there's nothing. You know, if there's nothing, why be right being the controller? You know,
controller, so you see, controller of nothing.
The controller of nothing. Yeah. I control more nothing than any man. Okay. All types of material consciousness are transformations of the three modes of material nature, the expansions of the Lord's illusory energy. Form is recognized by the function of the eye, and the eye's function is understood by the presence of perceivable form. The interaction of sight and form further depends on the presence of light provided by the demigods, whose service of universal management depends on the presence of those who are to be managed, namely the living entities experiencing form with their eyes. Thus the three factors, adiatma, represented by the senses such as the eye, adibhauta, the sense object such as form, and adidaiva, the influence of the controlling deities, exist in an interdependent relationship. Right? You know, what's the point of being king if there's no subjects? Right? Otherwise, then everybody's, you know, how you say that? A man is the king of his own castle, you know, castle, right? You know, at home, he's the... But, you know, who are the subjects, right? You know, cat, you know, like, yeah, so... Yeah. Yeah. I hold life and death sway over my citizens, whether I open this can of cat food or not, you know. Will I let the cat in? Will I let the cat out? It all depends on my... What do you call it? you know, how you say, monarchical, you know, whims, you know, like that. Yeah, so like that. So it doesn't really have any meaning. Right? The sun globe itself is said to be self-manifest, self-luminous, and self-experiencing. It does not share the interdependence of the senses and sense objects, although facilitating their function. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead facilitates the interdependent experiences of all living entities. For example, newspapers, radio, and television reveal world events to the mass of people. Parents reveal facts about life to their children, teachers to their students, friends to friends, and so on. The government manifests its will to the people, and the people to the government. The sun and moon reveal the visual forms of all objects, and the perception of sound reveals audible form. The vibrations of various types of music or rhetoric reveal the inner feelings of other living beings, and other types of knowledge are revealed by aroma, touch, and taste. In this way, through the interaction of the senses and mind with innumerable sense objects, different types of knowledge are acquired. All such informative interactions, however, depend upon the supreme illuminating power of the Personality of Godhead, as stated in the Brahma Samhita 5:52. Yat chakshur esha savita sakalagrahanam. Among all the planets, the sun is considered the eye of the Supreme Lord. The Personality of Godhead is eternally omniscient by his own transcendental potency, and thus no one can reveal anything to the Lord about anything. Still, Lord Krishna humbly accepts our prayers offered in Krishna consciousness. In conclusion, Lord Krishna clearly explains here that his sublime characteristics are completely different from those of the manifest universe. The Lord is therefore the supreme transcendental entity, free from all material influence. Right? So even though we're controlled by the material energy, Krishna is not. He's in control. Right? And so that's the point is that you can see is that why not accept this? It solves all the problems. All the philosophical things, all what you should do, everything is all solved by this method. But what happens? We don't want to accept this because then we're not the controller and enjoyer. Right? That's the whole problem. We want to maintain our position. And so then these alternative philosophies then seem to solve the particular problem we're having in karma and jnana. And, you know, so then we're happy. Yes? No? Kind of. Okay. The individual soul has no permanent relationship with the interdependent material functions of the senses, sense objects, and controlling deities. The living entity is originally pure spirit soul. It is meant to depend on the Personality of Godhead in the spiritual world. It is useless to try to analyze matter and spirit within the same categories, since they belong to different potencies of the Supreme Lord. Thus, the act of spiritually perceiving the Supreme Lord, his abode and his own self, is an entirely anti-material process realized within pure Krishna consciousness. Like that. So it can't be understood outside of Krishna consciousness. That's the whole, because one say, well, no, but why can't I understand my intelligence? Because it's outside the purview of the intelligence, which is material. It's spiritual. You can't understand it. Right? Only through spiritual process, then you can understand it. Yes? No? Very good. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-34. The speculative argument of philosophers, this world is real, or quote, end quote, or quote, no, it is not real, end quote, is based on incomplete knowledge of the Supreme Soul and is simply aimed at understanding material dualities. Although such argument is useless, persons who have turned their attention away from me, their own true self, are unable to give it up. Right? It's useless, but they can't not argue these points. Right? It's all about arguing. Okay. Footnote 42. The BBT purport explains that debate on the reality and unreality of the material world is futile without gaining the understanding of the supreme reality, the Supreme Lord. Okay. Okay. This is. If one doubts the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will inevitably doubt the reality of the Lord's creation. Thus, without understanding the Lord, mere argument and debate over the reality and non-reality of the material world is useless. The material, because you see it's real, but then there's the elements that's not real. And you say it's not real, but there's the elements that are real. So only if you understand the Lord, then you understand how it's both real and not real. The material world is real specifically because it emanates from the Supreme Reality, Lord Krishna. Without understanding the reality of Lord Krishna, one can never definitely ascertain the reality of his creation. One will always wonder if he is actually seeing something or merely thinking that he is seeing it. This kind of speculation can never be resolved without taking shelter of the Supreme Lord and is therefore useless. The devotees of the Lord are not inclined to such argument, because they are factually advancing in spiritual enlightenment and are fully satisfied with the progressively more beautiful experience of Krishna consciousness. Sutra 2229, Purva Paksha. So their doubt. Without recourse to external objects, everything in the waking world arises from vasana alone. By variety of cognition, just as one carries on activities in a dream. This idea is refuted in the next sutra. Vai dharmach cha na swap na divad. Vai dharmyat, on account of difference of nature. Cha and na not. Swap na divad, like dreams and the rest. One cannot claim that objects are only cognition as in dreams, since there is difference in the dream object and object of waking perception. Right? You call it a dream because there's a waking state. Right? So here's, they're saying it's no, it's just as in a dream, these are there, but there is no woken state. Right? It means their woken state is nothingness. So, okay. That's not exactly what you call an ideal waking state. Right? Okay. Sutra Prakashika. The difference between dream object and object in waking perception is that mental images do not persist and change abruptly, but wakeful perceptions persist day after day. Like the dream, it's always changing, always this and that. Like, you know, like sometimes you have a dream, you get up, you know, you wake up, you go back to sleep. It's not necessarily the dream continues. They might, but generally they don't seem to. Right? Especially if they're a nice dream, they best don't. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The word cha is for emphasis. It is not possible to say that just as in a dream or imagination, swapnadivat, one can conceive of objects like pots through cognition. The same happens in waking state. Why? Because there is a difference, vaidharmyat, between the objects of dream and waking state. Why? Because there's a difference, vaidharmyat, between the objects of dream and waking state. In a dream, objects are remembered from previous experience. In waking state, however, they are experienced directly, right? Because one's dependent upon the other. So even if they say it's like a dream, but where's the reality that dream came from? Because dream means you see things in actual external cognition. Then when you sleep or when you imagine things, then within the mind, based on what has been experienced from the external, then you're speculating or dreaming or whatever. So the whole point of where would that come from? Because they're two different things. So for them to say, no, this is where it comes from directly, can't work like that. Does that make sense?
Such simple points, and they form that also?
All the points are very simple, because when there's Krishna consciousness, then you see it all comes off very, very easily. But without it, by the modes of nature. So for us, when there's Krishna, then there's illumination. So because we're hearing from the bona fide Sampradaya, therefore these are illuminated very nicely. But for others, no, these are big things. We'll have to think about it. Well, I don't know. And you know that there's this and that, because it's all, that's how it'll work. The modes of nature are in control. So there, it's only if you can expose them to the devotion or to the chit shakti that they can change. That's why it's important that it is the chit shakti. Just this idea is, no, it's all dealing with the externals. So if we use externals of Krishna consciousness, then they and their externals, then they won't appreciate. So therefore, then we'll choose some externals that they appreciate, but maybe or maybe not we'll do Krishna consciousness, but because we're a devotee doing these external activities, then it must be devotional, so therefore them and that association, they might get some spiritual benefit, if someone even takes it that far. Right? Doesn't make sense. It's the connection with the chit potency that allows them to understand that. So then it's just by being there in the presence of a devotee that they're getting the benefit. But it's not necessarily what's being spoken or the activity. Does that make sense? So the idea is this, whatever, there's an opportunity that you could give them a spiritual experience through discussing the philosophy or the kirtan or prasad or something that will be direct, then that will always be taken as first option. And then if nothing's there, then just by being around, then they'll appreciate it. You know, but that'll take a long time.
Because before, we are trying to become the center. That's why there is not a complete usual.
Yes, because the difficulty is that, yeah, that could be another easy explanation as why is it not so easily accepted. Is that then you're not the center, you're not the controller, you're not the enjoyer. Now, do you want to give those up? No. So then these other philosophies, they accommodate that.
That's simple. Sometimes they come up with sophisticated stuff.
It doesn't matter. You know, it's like, if people buy it, it's done. You know what I'm saying? It's how... It's just like, it's all a matter of perception and all what you want. Okay. The boy and girl, you know, somehow they're in some strange way bump into each other, and then somehow or another it may or may not be working out, and then it starts to work out, and then something goes wrong, and that, okay? Not, yeah. And then, in that have going wrong, then after like 30 seconds, the guy says something and now everything's perfectly fine. Right? Now, there's other screenwriters where it's going to take the guy till the end of the movie to work it out. So, which was written by the nerd, which was written by a woman? The first one was the nerd, the second one was the woman. Right? Because that's his perception. It's just some trick. It's some this. It's not. They're not. It's not. It's not a nature. So that's the whole thing. Is that's the way they'd like it to be. But is it? Yeah. So that's the reality.
If it's a kid.
Yeah, but then the kids grow up, and they make money. Right? You know. So or they go to these big conferences. And they all dress up in superhero outfits. And they're thinking they look cool and they're all talking about this and that. But they have, you know, some big fat guy wearing this, like the Flash or something like that. He can't even hardly move, you know, like that, you know what I'm saying? You know? Or you have this little skinny, you know, toothpick guy wearing the Hulk outfit, you know, like that. And so in their mind, it's all happening. But in reality, someone else is kind of like, what's happening? What's going on? You know? But they're happy. You know, it's like kids. They'll get out in the backyard and all these things are happening and there's, you know, you know, big war going on and armies and this and dragons flying in the sky and all this kind of stuff when it's just them out there with a stick they picked up, you know. And, you know, and the mother's looking out the back window and yelling and screaming and running around. You know, it's okay. But was that too obscure that there I mentioned backyard? Backyard? Yard? What's a yard? You mean the parking lot behind the house? Right? Yeah. So, okay. In a dream, objects are remembered from previous experience. In a waking state, however, they are experienced directly. So you're awake, you experience something. You go to sleep, when you wake up in the morning, it's still there, right? The dishes are dirty in the sink. You go to bed, when you wake up in the morning, they're still there, right? Even though in your dream you're sitting back on the on the, you know, couch out in the sun like that, drinking your, you know, pina colada, and everybody else was there washing the dishes and cleaning the house, when you wake up in the morning, they're still there. That's the difference. So say what they like, it's still like that.
Can you say that the modern concept where kids have been engaged in video games and all that, where they're simply mental, you know, about it and not really involved, it's all coming from this particular idea of Buddhism?
The video games. Yeah, basically. It's the same point. Point is it's illusion on illusion on illusion. It's just a matter of there's illusion, then they create more on that. Because we want to be illusion. Because in there, then is he the big guy? Is he the big hero? Right? He's on level 127. Right? He's the best on the planet. Right? But if, you know, but if someone over, you know, over, you know, 5'2" walked into the room, he wouldn't know what to do. Right? But in the video game, he's the big guy there, and, you know, wiping out armies and, you know, like that. Right? Well,
yes.
Yeah. Or what is it? Or today, crushing so much candy like that. Who would crush candy? Why do you eat candy? You don't crush it, right? You know. Right? Maybe bugs, right?
But now, if you want to be the controller and see that there are many competitions,
or for the Aussies, yeah. Flying day crush,
yeah,
Avo crush, yeah. Okay.
If we want to be the controller and enjoyer, and we see that we are very small, we need to dream.
Yes, we need to dream.
Otherwise,
But the point is you're still going to be here.
Yes.
So then, you know, then, because in reality we are small. I mean, we're much smaller than we think we are. We're 1/10,000th tip of the hair. So therefore, if we're servant of Krishna, then you come to the, you know, the eternal platform of reality. Objects realized in dreams change continually with the movement with the moment, and are negated by as false by waking. Yeah, with the moment they change. Objects experienced in waking state, however, have the same quality even after 100 years. That objects are remembered in dreams was stated only as an argument. Actually, the opinion of the author, Vyas, is that the Lord creates situations in a dream according to what the individual should experience. Right? So the Lord's arranging that. What your experiences in the waking, what your experiences in the dreaming, it's all created by the Lord. Right. Footnote 43 and footnote 44. Okay. Later in Vedanta Sutta 3.2.1, Sanjay Shrishtir Ahahi, the Sutrakar confirms that the Lord creates objects in dreams via his potencies, because that is stated in the text. That the texts are accepted without challenging the scriptural authority was earlier verified in Vedanta Sutra 2.1.27. Shutesh tu shabda mulatva. The defects of the agent do not apply to Brahman. because of scriptural statements, which are the only proof concerning inconceivable objects, right? Because otherwise what's beyond our perception we have to accept from the authorities who are able to see from beyond there.
Yes.
Because it can't be confirmed by the intelligence.
Yes.
Yes. Right? Yes. But if we hear from them, then we're able to perceive it.
Yes.
Hence the Lord is the working principle in every state of existence, whether deep sleep, dream, or wakeful. Yes. It's still Him.
Yes.
Right? Deep sleep means one is merged into the Lord. Dream, that means that that level of consciousness is being controlled by the Lord. And wakefulness, that's controlled by the Lord. And then if we're on the spiritual platform, Turiya, then the Lord is also the controller of the spiritual platform through His yoga maya. Right? These lower ones are through Mahamaya, and the higher ones through yoga maya. Right? And then prema, then that's the fun. That controls the Lord. Right? The first four, the Lord controls. The last one, it controls Him.
Defects of the agent, what is...
Defects of the agent.
What is meant by that? I'm not able to get this point. Defects of the agent do not apply to Brahma. Which are the defects you are talking about? Please discuss. Second line of the agent, that.
Means... The agent means you as an agent. You're asleep, you're awake, you're in deep sleep. The defects you have don't apply to Brahman, who's controlling that situation. Does that make sense? Through his energies, he controls it. But because he's the source of it, he's beyond it. Does that make sense? Then footnote 44. Srila Jiva Goswami refutes the Yogacara Buddhists by explaining that scriptures state the world to be illusion in order to inspire one to meditate on the Lord. Hence, the world is real, though although temporary, indicating that the external objects are real, which give form to dream objects. So, quote, in dreams with forms of objects seen in the waking state held in the mind, the maya of Paramatma makes one identify it with an external object. But the dream object is not false. Those who do not know Paramatma are fixed in goals other than me, engage in arguments concerning the reality or unreality of the world, and do not cease to argue, though they achieve no results. They have turned their thoughts from me, the Lord, who gives regard only to the devotees. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:22-34. Everyone was here? That's the same. It was.
The Siddhanta. Siddhanta.
Yes. Yes, same. Yes, so whatever it is, even the dream. It's a dream, meaning that it's not what's going on, but still, that potency of the dream is real. That's coming from the Lord. So there's no such thing as that there's no reality. It's all real, but it's just temporary. But the concept of illusion is so that one gives up this and takes to the ultimate reality. Right? In other words, this is the inferior reality, that's the superior reality. Right? And how we'll perceive it, though those perceptions are real, is not necessary in line with what you're actually dealing with.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like the person thinks he's the best.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. So that's an illusion that he thinks he's the best. But that there is an illusion in which he thinks he's the best, that actually exists. So you have to be able to understand what is actually the illusion. Because there's nothing that doesn't exist. Right? It's just a matter of, you know, within the purview of our perception. But that's all coming from the Lord through His potencies. So depending upon what you're establishing, then you'll bring out various aspects. You'll say, yes, the idea that you're going to control and enjoy this world is an illusion. Because it won't happen. But that you think I can control and enjoy, that consciousness is actually real, controlled by the modes. But that it will have an effect, that's illusion. Yeah. It should be understood that transformation, parinama, is the conclusion of Bhagavatam. Sense vivarta, world is illusion, is a secondary feature propounded in the section on jnana. Right? So, parinama, the transformation, is what is going on. The different energies transform. So from the internal to the external, within the external to the various aspects, that's all going on. That's the transformation. Right? But to say it's all illusion, it doesn't exist, then that's a secondary feature that's given in the jnana section, but still based on the parinama. So we have to be able to keep the transformation in place and see there's an illusion. So what's the illusion? The illusion's in my perception. Right? But that my ability to perceive, that's still real. But, you know, the concreteness of what I perceive, for me, that may be illusory. Right? The abstract that we're dealing on, that's real. Right? The externals, that's real. Right? That makes sense. Since transformation is a chief feature in the section presenting the author's viewpoint, and since parinama attains even greater strength by agreeing with both sections, right? Parinama doesn't have a problem with both. The jnana, then that has a problem. I mean, then that world is illusion, vivarta. That won't be able to work with parinama, but parinama can accept this. So it's a greater principle, right? That's how when you're presenting a discussion, then that discussion which can accommodate the other one is actually the bigger discussion. Right? The viewpoint that can't is accommodated by the one that can accept both. Mm-hmm. But you have to know which is primary, which is secondary. Mm-hmm. Like that. They've taken their secondary thing as primary, that's the problem. And because of that, they can't acknowledge and accept the actual primary. But the primary has no problem with all these secondaries.
Mm. Mm. Now, primary is always connected with Bhakti.
The primary is Krishna. It'll always, whether you're bringing that element out or not, but it's always connected with Krishna. And our trying to understand it is always connected with Bhakti. Then only we can actually understand. Mm. Otherwise, the karmis and jnanis may also approach the Lord. Because, you know, it's understanding that it's only by His grace that these processes of karma and jnana even work, mm-hmm. right? So therefore, then one is accepting that, but they'll only know as much as they need to know to gain their goal.
Yes.
Right? Yes. So, that let's say the karmi wants something from the Lord, they turn to the Lord. So only that much they'll understand of the process. Yes. But that is not actually very useful to the soul. Mm-hmm. That they won't understand. That'll be revealed to the jnani.
Yes.
Right? That he'll only get up to the point of liberation and stop.
Yes.
While the devotee then goes beyond into bhakti. So it's because of bhakti the devotee actually understands.
Mm-hmm.
Others are getting some a bit of knowledge. But it's just a matter of how much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's all knowledge because it's the Lord's knowledge. He is knowledge. But the volume of it is how much is, you know, how much is the human platform. So if all we're doing is analyzing the elements, that's below the human standard of perception. You may say, no, but we're using the intelligence and the senses to a very fine degree. Yes, but the point is you're not actually, the consciousness is not being elevated because it's still staying on the Anamoya platform. Like that, while the conscious can raise to the Anandamaya.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so human life starts at Manomaya.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because then that platform is useful to get to bhakti.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. This parinama is for the purpose of revealing the inconceivable powers of the Lord. Then you understand the Lord and His position. Right? Because that reveals that. That's what it's for. It's not just to answer the question, it's to reveal the Lord's potency, His inconceivable powers. Right? Stating that the universe is illusory is only for the purpose of showing that one should meditate on the Lord, since the universe is temporary and extrinsic to the Lord. Right? It's His energy, but it's outside Him. Right? Because it's not His internal potency that He personally interacts with. It's his external potency that he controls, though he controls it through his external energy. So he doesn't actually directly interact with her as such in the way of you know, how you say, personally. It is not meant to show that the universe is false and not for the purpose of showing the Lord and the Jiva are the same Swarup. Right? So it's not to say the soul and Brahman are one. That it's not for saying that the universe is false, it doesn't exist. That's not the purpose of it. The purpose of it is temporary. So for an eternal Jiva, what you'll get out of it. Does that make sense? It's just like, let's say you're stuck out in the forest and you'll be there for 12 hours until the sun rises and then they come and find you. And you have a box of matches and there's nothing there, so by lighting a box of matches, you know, lighting one match and holding it, you'll keep yourself warm all night. Okay? Does that work? Because otherwise you think you were out in the forest. Why did you get some firewood and that? Okay, let's take it that you're in the big bad city. You're there sitting under the lamppost, you know, so all it is cement, curb and cement. And so now, can we apply the matches? Right, we're good? No purva pakshas here. No doubts. Okay. No? Okay. So, then that's the whole thing, is that the it's an illusion to think you'll be kept warm by this, because it can't do anything for the soul. Like that. The things are going on in this, but it's all temporary. What will it do for you? You know? Or you're hungry, he'll give you one grain of rice. Right? It's not going to work. Yeah. Vaidharmach chana swapnadivat. One cannot claim that external objects are only cognitions as in dreams, since there is a difference in dream object and object of waking perception. Brahma Sutra 2229. Thus it is said in Narada Purana, Jagat vilapayam asur it yuchetata tat smite. Nachatat smriti matrena layo bhavati nishchitam. It is said that by remembering the Lord, one destroys attachment to the universe. But by remembering the universe, one does not destroy the attachment. Right? So then you understand which way it's supposed to go. Because you say it's just a dream and all that, so it doesn't matter. But if you attach to the universe, then that does, it means if you contemplate the universe, it only increases attachment. While you contemplate Krishna, then it increases attachment there and decreases the attachment in the material world. So it's the bigger principle. Okay, then, continuing, Srimad Bhagavatam 429-2b. Everything happens within time, which consists of past, present, and future, is merely a dream. That is the secret understanding in all Vedic literature. Right? Because it's within the time, it's temporary. It's past, present, and future. Right? That's why he mentioned it. So that means it's temporary. That is merely a dream. It's a dream because a dream means you're taking something that's real and projecting it into something that's not. Right? So you're taking what's here, this material world, and projecting that I will enjoy myself. That's not real. That's not going to happen. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So now, all this material world is a dream.
Yes, yeah. It's all a dream. Yeah. So now you can either sing a song about Krishna or make up a nice dream, nice song about the dream.
Yeah. This is why actually the purpose of the Veda is to awaken us, to make us awaken.
Yes, the whole point of the Veda is to awaken us to our relationship, who we are, and our relationship with the Lord.
Yes.
Like that. And so everything is just details of that. Always remember Krishna, never forget.
Yes.
Like that. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16-53-54. When a person is in deep sleep, he dreams and sees in himself many other objects, such as great mountains and rivers, or perhaps even the entire universe, although they are far away. Sometimes when one awakens from a dream, he sees that he is in a human form, lying in his bed in one place. When he sees himself in terms of various conditions, as belonging to a particular nationality, family, and so on, then he sees himself. All the conditions of deep sleep, dreaming, and wakefulness are but energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One should always remember the original creator of these conditions, the Supreme Lord, who is unaffected by them. Right? So, remembering the Lord, that's the whole point. All these states are for remembering the Lord. Like, when Prabhupada talks about the cowherd boys, and they go take rest at night, then they take rest and think about, playing with Krishna. So in their dreams, they're just absorbed in remembering all the pastimes of Krishna and all the things that they could do and all that. So they're always absorbed in Krishna. Then they wake up in the morning and then go see Krishna. So they're always absorbed in Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:13-27-28. Waking, sleeping, and deep sleep are the three functions of the intelligence and are caused by the modes of material nature. The living entity within the body is ascertained to possess characteristics different from these three states and thus remains as a witness to them. The spirit soul is trapped in the bondage of material intelligence, which awards him constant engagement in the illusory modes of nature. But I am the fourth stage of consciousness, beyond wakefulness, dreaming, and deep sleep, become situated in me. The soul should give up the bondage of material consciousness. At that time, the living entity will automatically renounce the material sense objects and the material mind. Footnote 45. The BBT purport disproves the Yogacharas who claim cognition as the cause of creation by explaining that wakefulness, dream, and deep sleep are the three states of the soul's existence. However, one must be situated in the fourth state, pure consciousness, be free from illusion by developing Krishna consciousness. The soul actually has nothing to do with the material world, having no permanent or natural relationship with it. Real renunciation means to give up the illusory identification with matter in its subtle and gross forms. Sushuptam, or deep sleep, indicates sleep without any dreams or conscious activity. These three states are described by Lord Krishna as follows. Sattvaj, Jagaranam, Vidyad. One should know that wakefulness is born from the mode of goodness, dreams from the mode of passion, and deep dreamless sleep from the mode of ignorance. The fourth element, pure consciousness, is different from these three and pervades them. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:25-20. Real freedom means sakshitvena, or to exist as a witness to the functions of illusion. Such an advantageous position is achieved by development of Krishna consciousness. Right, so that state, that's what we say, it's Krishna is that fourth state. He is that existence. So you should be situated there. But then interacting with Krishna in relationship based on love, that's the fifth state. Right? So that's why for us, the fourth state, which is liberation, is not actually very interesting. It's the state you're situated in, but to take that as a goal, that'll never be. It is simply the proper position, just like to lead kirtan for the deities, you situate yourself in the temple. But while you're there in that situation, then you do kirtan. Does that make sense? Lord Krishna now specifically answers the question that the sages originally placed before Lord Brahma. Ultimately, the spirit soul has nothing to do with the material sense objects and modes of nature. But because of one's false identifications with the material body, the modes of nature are empowered to engage one in illusory occupations. By destroying this false identification with matter, the soul gives up the illusory occupations awarded by the modes of nature. It is clearly stated in this verse that the living entity is not empowered to independently free himself from illusion, but must situate himself in Krishna consciousness in full awareness of the Supreme Lord. Right? So the soul can't do that themselves. It's only by taking shelter of the Lord that that can happen. Mm. Right? So you have to surrender to the Lord. Mm. Then, because he is the Lord of Maya, he's beyond Maya, then you're situated in the transcendental position. Then, as the Lord, you can observe what's going on with the external energy.
Yes.
You're not controlled by it. But that's only because you're in connection with the Lord. On our own, we're so small, we can't be influenced. Right? So that's the position. That's why the idea is, no, I'll be very austere, I'll do this, I'll do that. That will make it happen. No, no. You're simply trying to please the Lord. That's why then those recommended activities, those are the ones that are then performed. Why those recommend? Because that's what the acharyas give. Why are the acharyas? Because they're the ones that are connected to Krishna. So they know what pleases Krishna. So you do those activities, that pleases Krishna. Krishna being pleased, then he reveals these things. Right? So... the Sutrakar indicates that the estimation of yogacharas, that varieties of cognition occur because of varieties of impressions without any external objects, is refuted in the next two sutras. Right? So you're getting here the same, like you get in the Mayavad. It means the same illusory concept. They're applying it in a different way. Okay, you have Brahman, right, for the Mayavadis.
Mm-hmm.
Then, how do you get Jivas? It means Brahman is covered by illusion. Right? Then you get a jiva. Okay, great. How do you get illusion? Oh, that means how you say? It's how do you get mayas? Because the jivas, then they don't understand Brahman, so that creates maya. You understand? It doesn't make sense because they're saying each one creates the other. Yeah.
And even in the Mayavadis, they have different concepts of in this particular theory that how the jivas are integrated. Either Brahman is bifurcated or it's a shadow or it's a reflection.
Yes, but it's still the same thing. It's illusions involved.
Yes, yes.
Just what they use as, you know, what it is. So the point is that they're using the same thing, is that, okay, you have all this variety of cognition. Where does that come from? From impressions. Where do the impressions come from? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the whole thing. Is that comes from external objects. But they're trying to say, so it doesn't make sense. They just, when you ask one, they say the next, and then you generally forget about it. Most people do stop like that. Right? That's how politics works. Right? Is that you give one explanation, people stop there. They don't keep going. Right? Does that make sense? That's how the whole system works. So, same way in philosophy or in emotion, just one thing is there, you stop there. What about what's behind that? No, you stop there.
The yogacharis say that cognition is real. And we saw earlier, the Shantarantikas, they say that ideas are real. So then, are they seemingly the same, or is there a difference between ideas?
It means there's difference, because otherwise why would they be a different school? But the point is that the idea is what you think in that cognition, but because you're aware of it, you know, the ability to, they're taking what you're thinking is the real, and these are taking that the thought process is real and what you're thinking is not. So it's just, it's same difference. It's just they're taking different aspects of the same. You know, which aspect of nothingness you want to take. Sutta 2230. Na bhavo nu... Nupalabdhe, not bhava, existence, anupalabdhe, because they are not perceived. In your theory, there will be no impressions, since there is no contact with external objects. So you can't get an impression to then be cognizant of. So that's the difficulty, is that the impressions come from the external objects. Sutra Prakashika. Their theory has no shelter for impressions, since the necessary condition for the generation of impressions is an external object, which, according to their theory, is unreal. And that's the problem. Sri Govinda Bhasya. Siddhanta. Existence of impressions cannot occur according to your theory. Why? Because according to your theory, there is no contact with external objects. Anupalabdhe. The necessity of external objects is proved by the fact that in the presence of objects, impressions arise. Whereas in their absence, there are no impressions. Since you do not accept external objects, no impressions would arise. You have some guy sitting there, like that, and so he's just sitting there, you know, doing his couch potato, you know.
Duty?
Yes, is being absorbed in this state of couch potato-atva, right? Just the existence as a couch potato. Now, there's no impressions, there's nothing going on there. Now, someone else in the house walks by with a plate, and on the plate is a sandwich. Now, the process of impressions will start. You understand? So it's based on the external objects. That's how it's going to work. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 11, 22, 37 through 38. Lord Krishna said, the material mind of men is shaped by the reactions of fruitive work. Along with the five senses, it travels from one material body to another. Right? So the senses, the mind, these go with the living entity. The subtle body goes from body to body. Right? It's the same one. It just, by the modes of nature, takes on different abilities. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're a bug, you have a bug's mind. When you're a human, you have the human mind. Right? Like this. Does that make sense? The senses, then what they can perceive, but the principle is there. The spirit soul, although different from his mind, follows it. The mind, be quiet. Why does he follow it? Because he's attached to the material concept. That's why then he's absorbed in it. The mind, bound to the reactions of fruit of work, always meditates on the objects of the senses, both those that are seen in this world and those that are heard about from Vedic authority. Consequently, the mind appears to come into being and to suffer annihilation along with its objects of perception, and thus its ability to distinguish past and future is lost. Okay. Footnote 46. The BBG purport explains that the function of the mind is to constantly meditate on the physical, external objects and conceptual objects heard of, which keeps the soul bound in the repeated cycle of birth and death. One may ask how the subtle body or mind gives up its connection with one physical body and enters into another. Such entering and leaving a physical body is called birth and death by conditioned souls. One utilizes his present senses to meditate on the visible objects of this world, beautiful women, palatial estates, and so on. And similarly, one daydreams about the heavenly planets described in the Vedas. As death occurs, the mind is pulled away from the objects of its immediate experience and enters another body to experience a new set of sense objects. As the mind undergoes total reorientation, there is the apparent loss of one's previous mentality and creation of a new mind, although actually the same mind is experiencing, but in a different way. It's the same, it's just, you know, the experience comes out different because all the connections are there, can't be seen here, so that's why you can't. Right, the impressions are coming up by what you're dealing with now. Not that there's not something deeper that's there that may influence how you deal with what's present, but you're only dealing with what's present before you. Right? And that's what you're conscious of. There may be previous samskaras from previous lives, but you're not, that's simply a background for what you're perceiving now and then analyzing.
So the most important are the closer past. Just immediately the most important.
Yeah, that's all you deal with. Right? You're not going to deal... The other things may have an influence, but you don't even understand that. Like, so somebody likes something, someone doesn't like something, you don't know why. Yes. Like that. It's coming from the past, but the point is you don't remember it, so it thinks it's a new mind, new, fresh, you know?
Yes.
You know, it's like, what is it saying? Oh, how you say... Mother's giving birth to life, you know, the miracle of life and all this kind of thing. But the life was already there, the subtle body, and then the child's there, and then the personality comes out, and then, oh, wow, that was all, it's already there. It's just a matter of being able to function in a new setting. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you do something, and then we put you in a completely new setting. Right? So then you'll kind of, you work it out. There's some concept. Let's say, okay, this lifetime you're a big hockey player. Mm-hmm. Right? And so then you're able to do that. The next life, then there's no hockey. You know, they're playing cricket. Right? So then the point is there's a concept in the back of your mind about, you know, this concept of game and winning and balls getting to certain places and hitting them and, you know, stuff like that. And this, so you can relate to this, to sport. But you have to learn new this one. Because then this body and everything, the senses have to be adjusted with this. Though, because of previous, then there may be some impressions that allow you to be more focused. Does that make sense? But you have to go with what you're dealing with now. Like that. But the point is it appears that it's a new life, new mind, new everything. But it's not, it's the same one. Whatever mind you have now, it's the one you've been with since time immemorial. Right? Like that.
It's chewing the chew.
Yes, that's chewing the chew. Like, really chewing the chew. You know, I mean, you know, even the... Yeah. The conditioned soul is overwhelmed by the constant flow of material experience. Considering...
Consisting...
Where is this coming from?
Previous footnote about the most reference.
Oh, okay. So this is from the previous page. Okay. The conditioned soul is overwhelmed by the constant flow of material experience, consisting of direct perception and abstract contemplation of the objects of this world. One thereby loses his transcendental memory of his relationship with God. As soon as one identifies with this world, he forgets his eternal identity and surrenders to the false ego created by Maya. You forget your last birth, you forget your original position. Right? So as soon as you come into the material world, you forget that. And then as we go, we forget, you know, whichever one we were in. So
yeah. If we have the same mind since the beginning, but the body is changing. So to say that we are different from the body is one thing, but to understand that we are different from the mind.
Because we're following the mind. It's just that we get the same one. You don't need a different one. Because the mind and intelligence, false ego, like this is subtle.
Yes.
So you don't really need a new one. But the body made out of the gross external elements, then that you need a new one because they get old.
Yes.
They stop working. The mind doesn't get old.
Yes. Okay.
Srimad Bhagavatam 3.27.4. Actually, a living entity is transcendental to material existence, but because of his mentality of lording it over material nature, his material existential condition does not cease. And just as in a dream, he is affected by all sorts of disadvantages. So it's because we identify with it, because we want to lord it over, that's why it goes on. We give that up, it goes away. But how do you give it up? By going to the natural, the original, which is being Krishna conscious, the servant of Krishna. Yeah. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premadhi.